Not every central bank meeting is front page news. But last week, the Bank of Japan made history, and we think that matters for other markets as well. Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everyone. It's the week of March 25th, 2024, and the U.S. Federal Reserve met last week, kept interest rates on hold, and updated its economic projections. Normally, that is exactly what we'd be focused on today, the Fed. But another global central bank also met last week, the Bank of Japan. Well, the Bank of England, too, but we're going to focus on the Bank of Japan. And they made historic moves, ending the country's 8 years of negative interest rate policy, or NERP. So Julia Herman and myself are going to share a bit of background on this shift and, most importantly, share what it means for a broader global policy and asset allocation.
This is Japan's first interest rate hike since 2007. In the aftermath of the global financial crisis, or GFC, every major central bank took interest rates down to zero or beyond and embarked on years of asset purchases, quantitative easing, or QE. And this created an extremely stimulative monetary environment globally for a solid decade plus.
Now, what made Japan unique is that this wasn't particularly stimulative. And you could argue that that might have been true for the US and Europe in periods as well. But even after the stimulative impact of the pandemic, Japan kept its negative interest rate policy again until last week.
You're so right to point out Japan's structural low growth situation, both in the post-COVID era and in the post-GFC era. So back then, it was due to a range of factors. There's Japan's particularly old and aging demographic situation, the fact that most wages in the country are decided at the collective level and therefore have been historically low and rigid, perhaps more so than in other economies, and a corporate and consumer culture of saving rather than spending and investment. Now, negative interest rates are supposed to break this behavior because you're not getting any interest on your government bond savings. But unfortunately, in Japan, for that post-GFC decade, it seemed to create a negative feedback loop of zero returns on big portions of savings.
I was myself living in Europe in the financial crisis and post-financial crisis era. And so I'll throw a reminder in here that there were so many fears that Europe was going the way of Japan because the European economy also wasn't really responding to zero and negative interest rate policy. And with below target inflation persisting in the US at the time as well, these fears were spreading everywhere. And we forget about that in the post-COVID era, but back then there was a lot of concern that once a central bank went to zero or below zero, there was no coming back from it.
But last week, we learned that you can go positive again, barely positive, when the Bank of Japan brought its policy rate up from negative 0.1% to a range of 0% to 0.1%. So essentially zero. Lauren, can you tell us what made this possible this time? What broke us out of that negative feedback loop I mentioned? Because if interest rates are rising, it means the central bank thinks that the economy might need less support.
Right. Before we even begin, though, just one quick caveat that the Bank of Japan is continuing a sizable asset purchase program to defend its currency. So by both the fact that policy rates are around zero and continued quantitative easing, the policy stance is still squarely accommodative. But the Japanese economy is very much showing signs of life. The post-COVID era brought moderate inflation back to Japan, and the latest round of broad-based wage negotiations came in at close to 5.9% year on year.
I mean, wow, I thought that continued 4% wage growth in the U.S. has been really solid. That's the highest increase in 30 plus years, right?
It is. And at the same time, the government and private sector in Japan have been making meaningful changes to promote competitiveness. And this is giving investors some confidence that some of these upticks in growth could potentially continue. Government policies have focused on improving investment and labor conditions. And in the private sector, just as an example, the Tokyo Stock Exchange has compelled companies with low book values to reduce cash via investment or explain their choice. And that's a big deal.
And all of this amounts to strong local currency or yen equity returns and a considerable shift in global corporate and investor expectations for Japan's growth trajectory.
So Japan is on the move. And with that as base, let's talk about the implications for global yields. Our team's long-term interest rates view, as we normalize from the COVID era, is that rates in the U.S. are likely to be in a moderately higher range. And the fact that Japan will possibly be able to participate in this normalization happening globally, that supports and broadens this view.
There are three factors that contribute to the direction of long-term interest rates. Number one, inflation expectations. Number two, the path of policy rates. And number three, the term premium, which is essentially supply and demand for government bonds. The shifts we discussed in Japan, including rising inflation and rising interest rates, and a corresponding increase in demand for Japanese assets, those are certainly happening. But we will likely still need to see conviction firm up over time that these are long-term themes and will affect the long-term interest rate trajectory as opposed to the cyclical one.
That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea. And we want to discuss one direct implication of this Bank of Japan policy shift, as well as one implication of that long-term interest rates discussion that Julia shared.
First is the direct Bank of Japan policy shift. We need to think about if and to what extent the end of negative interest rate policy in Japan and therefore now globally might mean for global government bond investors. In this hunt for yield, many Japanese investors, from individuals to large pension funds, had sought out U.S. treasuries, so U.S. government bonds, rather than Japanese government bonds. But for the past few years, this benefit, which is a carry trade for some and a hedging mechanism for others, has been lessening. This is in part because the U.S. yield curve has been inverted, and in part because market interest rates have been rising in Japan. We've seen hundreds of billions of dollars very slowly being repatriated from treasuries back to Japanese government bonds over the last 2 years. And we expect this to continue now. But overall, Japanese holdings of treasuries are over $1 trillion. So we don't consider this to be a disruptive force to demand in the treasury market.
Exactly. These changes, capital markets globally are so big. So these changes for now are happening on the margin. Finally, though, a word on our moderately higher view on long-term interest rates. This view is a structural backing for our high conviction view in infrastructure investment, from energy infrastructure to digital infrastructure, supply chain reglobalization, you name it. And this theme can be accessed directly through real estate and infrastructure approaches, but also through municipal bonds and even the equities and corresponding corporate bonds of companies participating in building out this theme. All of this allows investors to swim in what we see as a structural growth lane ahead. Coming up next, we've been getting lots of questions on the status of commercial real estate and banking health in the U.S. So just thinking a little bit ahead, we have a few powerhouse guests coming in to school us in a few weeks' time. But that's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com/global-markets. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin here with Julia Herman, and we will see you next time. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. Diversification cannot assure a profit or protect against loss in a declining market. The opinions expressed are those of the Global Market Strategy Team of New York Life Investment Management, LLC, and not necessarily those of other investment boutiques affiliated with New York Life Investments. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding any strategy, and there's no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. New York Life Investments is both a service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with the New York Life Insurance Company, New York, New York, 10010.